The process of searching for a set of Dalet Minim can be quite challenging sometimes. There are many different variables to consider. There are so many terms that the Mochrim throw out. Sometimes there seems to be a language barrier between the Mochrim and the customers. And of course, there's the question of what is Ma'akev even b'di'evet, what is absolutely necessary to be yotzei the mitzvah of Dalet Minim, and what is just the hiddur l'chatchila. In today's shir, I'd like to outline some of the basic halachas of Dalet Minim to give us a better sense of what we should be looking for, and then hopefully the process might become a little bit easier. Let's begin with the Esrig. The first thing that one should consider in the Esrig is whether it really is an Esrig, or it's what we call an Esrig Hamurkav, it's a grafted Esrig. The experts point out that the Esrig tree by nature is a weak type of tree. So a person who wants to grow an Esrig tree, wants it to be strong, wants it to last from year to year, he might be tempted to graft that tree with other similar trees, other minim that are similar, so that he'll strengthen the tree. But the problem is, the poskim say that an Esrig Hamurkav is posel for the mitzvah. They give different reasons for why it should be posel. Some want to say that an Esrig Hamurkav is chaser, it's missing something. It is an Esrig, but it's missing a little bit in the Esrig. Pasuk says, Ulakachtim lachem, shetei lekicha tama, the Gemara says that the lekicha of the Dalet Minim is supposed to be a complete lekicha. So if the Esrig is Murkav, some of the poskim claim that it's not a complete lekicha, it's chaser, it's missing a little bit, so that's why it's going to be posel. Others suggest that an Esrig Hamurkav is posel because it's a mitzvah haba b'avera. Since you grafted the Esrig tree with another tree, that's an Aveira, and one is not allowed to use a Chevtze Shel Aveira for the mitzvah. The Magen Avraham writes in Shulchan Aruch that an Esrig Hamurkav is possible for a very simple reason, and that is because it's not an Esrig. Once you graft it with other Minim, it's not an Esrig. The Shem Esrig falls away, and that's why it's possible, because the mitzvah of Dalet Minim requires that you take an Esrig, but if it's Murkav, then it's not going to be called an Esrig, and that's why it's possible for the mitzvah. They tell a story that once Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was asked why an Esrig Hamurkav is posel, so he opened up a Shulchan Aruch, the Siman Tov Resh Memches. And he showed the person that it says, Dvarim Hapsulim, the Esrig. He says, that's why a Murkav is posel. So Lechari, he was alluding to the point of the Magen Avraham, that if it's not an Esrig, then you can't get started. So if it's Murkav, if it's grafted with other Minim, so then it's going to be posel for the mitzvah. The question is, how do we know if the Esrig is a pure Esrig or if it's Murkav? So the Ramah in a tshuva has a famous comment. He says that there are four simanim for an Esrig hakoshen. Four telltale signs that can indicate to us that the Esrig is not grafted. First of all, the kosher Esrig has blitos, it has bumps on the sides of the Esrig. Secondly, the ukats, the stem, the bottom stem of the Esrig is shakua, it's sunken into the Esrig. We know that there are two stems on the typical Esrig. There's the pitum on top, then on the bottom you have an ukats, that's where the Esrig grows from the tree. So the ukats is normally shakua. In the kosher Esrig, the ukats is shakua, it's sunken into the Esrig. The pitum sticks out on top, but the ukats is shakua. Thirdly, the Ramah says that in an Esrig HaKosher, the klipa, the peel, is thick. If you look at other citrus fruits, at a lemon and other, if you cut them open, you'll see that the peel is thinner, it's not as thick. And finally, the Ramah says that in an Esrig HaKosher, the garinim, the seeds, are vertical, they're not horizontal. These are the four simanim that the Ramah gives for the kosher Esrig. And many follow the Ramah, many assume that if you just check the Esrogim, if you check the Esrogim in the grove and you see that they follow these four simanim, then you can assume that the Esrogim there are not Murkav and you can use them for the mitzvah. But that's in the Eidach Redis in Yerushalayim follows the Ramah. The Badatz takes Esrogim from every grove that wants to get their Hashgacha. They take a few Esrogim from each grove and they open them up and they see exactly if they follow the simanim. If they follow the Simanim of the Ramah, then the Badatz gives a stamp of approval on that growth. They follow the Ramah. But the Mishneh Berurah quotes that the Chasam Sofer disagreed with the Ramah. He claimed that an Esrig can only be used for the mitzvah if it has a Mesorah. If it doesn't have a Mesorah that it's kosher, then it can't be used for the mitzvah. You can't rely on the Simanim. And many follow this Chumrah of the Chasam Sofer. L'chasam Sofer and his followers were makbid afke to take Italian esrogim, what are called Yanava esrogim, because they felt that those had a good mesorah. Reb Chaim and many briskas were noheg to take Moroccan esrogim, because they felt that those had a good mesorah. And the Chazon Ish had his own mesorah of what he thought was an esrog akosher. So the reason why people are makbid to take different streams of esrogim, different types, is because they feel that you need a mesorah. They're following the Chasam Sofer's opinion against the Ramah, that you need a mesorah for the esrog, so you can only take a particular type. If you just cut open the esrogim and you see they follow the simanim of the Ramah, that's not enough. So they feel this is not just a hiddur, but if you take an esrog that's safek murkav, you might not be yotzei the mitzvah b'chlal. It's a lot more expensive to take these other types. But they feel that this is not just a hiddur, but you really have to do that. Most poskim assume that it's enough to follow the Ramah. Ramah holds that if you check the esrogim and they have the simonim of the esrogim that are kosher, so that's enough. That's enough to assume that the esrog is kosher. It's not a suffix murkav, and you can use that for the mitzvah. I saw there was a hand up. Yes. The hashgacha on the box is probably telling you that they cut open the esrogim from the grove and they check them to see that they follow the simanim. If the hashgacha says it's a Chazon Ish esrog from a particular zan, there are different zanim, different people took, from the Chazon Ish groves. There's a Lefkovich zan, and there are other groves that took from the Chazon Ish's original esrog tree, wherever he found that tree, wherever he had that tree. So they took from that tree and they planted other groves. So as long as there's a mesorah, if you can trust the individual who replanted the Chazon Ish esrogim in other places, if you can trust him, so then you can assume that it follows the mesorah of the Chazon Ish. So they have the Chazon Ish and Braverman, and there are all these different different esrogim that have various mesoros that those are esrogim kshem. But if you just have a regular hashgacha that says that the esrog is kosher, but it's not a particular type, so then lechora what they're telling you is that they cut open the esrogim and determine that they follow the simanim of the Ramah. So therefore, you can rely on that to assume that the esrog is kosher. Okay, this is the first question that you have to address. What are some of the psulim that an esrog could have? So the most basic psul that everyone knows about is if the pitum falls off. Nitla pitmaso, as the Mishnah says. Mishnah daf lamed dalet amid beis in sukkah. If nitla pitmaso, then the esrog is possible. But if nital uktso, if the ukits, the bottom stem, falls off, so then the esrog is still kosher. What does that mean that it's nitla pitmaso? Even the children know that nitla pitmaso is possible. But the Gemara adds the knech, the Gemara adds the point, that nitla pitmaso means nitla buchnaso. Just complicates the matter. We don't know what a buchna means. If the buchna falls off, so then the esrog is possible. What does that mean? So Rashi and Rav Rishonim explain, nitla buchnaso means that not only did the shoshanta, did the ball on top of the pitim fall off, on the pitim is normally, the esrog comes up a little bit, and then there's like a stem, and there's a ball on top of the stem. So that's the shoshanta. The top, the ball is called the shoshanta. So Rashi and Rav Rishonim learned that nitla buchnaso doesn't mean that the shoshanta fell off, that the ball fell off. More than the ball fell off, part of the eitz fell off as well. The stem has to fall off as well in order for the esrog to be possible. How much of the stem has to fall off? So that's a machlokas in the poskim. The Magen Avraham assumes that the entire stem has to fall off. It's not enough that a little bit of the stem falls off, but the entire stem coming from the dag on the top of the esrog has to fall off. And the Taz goes even further. He says not only does the stem have to fall off, but enough has to come out that there's like a chor. There's like a hole remaining in the esrog itself. That's called nitla buchnasa. There is an opinion in the Ran that even if only the Shoshanta falls off, that's also Nitla Pitmaso, and that would be a problem. But the Mishnah Berurah says that's based on a faulty reading of the Rif. It's a mistaken reading of the Rif, so there's no need to be Machmir for that Ran. The Ramah quotes the Chumer, but the Mishnah Berurah says he doesn't see the reason to be Machmir for that Chumer, that if Nitla Shoshanta, then it's going to be Paso. That's not nitla buchnasa. Nitla buchnasa means that the eitz fell off, and that is a machlokas haposkim. How much of the eitz has to fall off? The whole eitz, or so much of the eitz, even part of the eitz that's inside the esrig itself, so that it'll look like there's a chor, there's a hole in the esrig. Of course, we're all familiar with the comment of the Ramah that if the esrig grew that way, if it grew without a pitim, so then it's kosher. What does that mean, it grew without a pitim? No esrig grows without a pitim initially. The answer is the pitim falls off at some point in time when the esrig is still attached to the tree. If the pitim falls off after it's been detached from the tree, so then we can talk about the psul. But if the pitim falls off while it's still growing on the tree, so then it's nicker, it's noticeable. If you look at the esrig carefully, you show it to a mumche, someone who's not such an expert, who can also figure out. It's not so black. It's not deep brown in the top of the esrog. It's like a little bit whitish. So that shows you, that's the sign that the pitim fell off while it was still growing on the tree. And the Ramah says that as long as it grew that way, then it's kosher. The only time we say that if the pitim falls off, then the esrog is possible, it's if it falls off after the esrog has been detached from the tree. And as we pointed out, even some of the stem, right? Some of the stem has to be cut off as well in order for the esrog to be possible. The Mishnah Berurah points out that if a person can find a better esrog, one that the pitim didn't fall off at all, one that if the shoshanta, let's say, fell off, that's all that fell off. So the Mishnah Berurah says you can find a better esrog, better not to take this esrog, even if only the shoshanta fell off. There is an opinion of the Ran that even if the shoshanta falls off, that's also nitla pitmasa. So if you have a better esrog, you have another esrog, so you should take that one. But if this esrog is so beautiful, if every other aspect of this esrog is much better than the other one, then it's probably better to take this esrog, even if the shoshanta fell off, because if the stem is still there, that's not nitla pitmasa, according to the poskim, so then it might be better to take this esrog. It's important to keep in mind that even if the pitim, a little bit of the pitim, if the shoshanta falls off, the esrog is still kosher. So if a person had a good esrog b'yom tov rishon, and then on chol hamoed, the pitim, the esrog drops, and the shoshanta falls off, the shoshanta is very sensitive. So if the shoshanta, if the ball falls off, l'chora, one doesn't have to borrow an esrog from his friend, he can still take that esrog. Why? Because in most circumstances, the stem is still going to be there. The stem is there. Most poskim assume that's not nitla pitmasa. That's completely kosher. So it's important to keep in mind, just because the top of the pitim falls off, that doesn't automatically passel the esrog. Others point out that there's another reason not to be concerned about the pitim falling off of the esrog throughout the rest of Yom Tov. That is because the question is, what's the psul of nitla pitmasa? Why exactly is it passel for the mitzvah? There are two ways to look at it. One possibility is that it's chaser. The esrog has to be complete, and if something of the fruit is taken out, let's say there's a hole in the flesh of the esrog, so the esrog is chos, it's missing something, it's not a lakicha tama, so it's pasul for the mitzvah. That's one reason to pasul nitla pitmasa. But the other way to look at it is that we know that the esrog is called a pre-eitz hadar. The esrog is supposed to be a beautiful fruit, and maybe nitla pitmasa is not as beautiful, so it's not hadar, maybe that's why it's pasul for the mitzvah. Different ways to look at it. What's a nafkamina? It's still going to be possible anyway. No, the nafkamina is after the first day of Yom Tov. After the first day of Yom Tov, it could be that choser is not a psul anymore. The Gemara and Daf Lamed Vav, some of you who learned Masech the Sukkah last year, are familiar perhaps with the Gemara. Gemara tells a story that Rabbi Chanina was makbil ba v'nafik ba, that on Yom Tov Sheni, Chol Hamoed, in Chutz Laretz, Rabbi Chanina was makbil ba v'nafik ba. He dipped the esrog in, and he took a bite out of it, and he was yotze with that esrog. Why did he do that? To show the Talmidim that after Yom Tov Rishon, you can be yotze even with an esrog that's chaser. Chaser is a psul only by Yom Tov Rishon. L'kachtam lechem by Yom HaRishon. L'kichatam is a psul only on the first day. So he did this. He was matul bavanavigba, meaning he took a bite out of the esrog to show that an esrog ha-chaser is kosher by Yom Tov Sheni. It's only possible by Yom Tov Rishon. What's the din of hadar? Let's say something is not hadar, it's missing in hadar. Is that only a psul b'yom tov rishon, or would that be a psul even b'yom tov sheni? It's a major machlokas in the Rishonim. Tosfos, at the beginning of the third parak of Sukkah, writes that he thinks that hadar is different than chaser. That chaser is only psul b'yom tov rishon, but would be kosher the rest of the days of Yom Tov. But hadar is psul the entire Yom Tov. But the Rambam is willing to be makel even for hadar. The Rambam says not only is chaser psul only on Yom Tov rishon, but it's but Hadar also is only possible on Yom Tov Rishon, but the rest of Yom Tov on Chol HaMoed, then both Chaser and Hadar would be kosher. And the Mechaber and the Rambam have a machlokas lahalacha, what the din is, do we follow Tosis, do we follow the Rambam? The Mechaber follows the Rambam, he's Mekel, and the Rambam is Machmer. The Rambam assumes that Hadar is a psul, even for the rest of the days of Yom Tov as well. So at first glance, Chora, there's no difference. If Nitla Pitmaso is posel midin Chaser, if it's posel midin Hadar, for Ashkenazim, there's no difference. For Sfadim, there's a big difference, because on Yom Tov, on Yom Tov Sheni, well, actually, for Sfadim, there's no. Again, according to the Ramah, if you hold that Hadar is going to be posel for all of Yom Tov, so then there should be a difference, because Chaser is going to be kosher the rest of the days of Yom Tov. Hadar is going to be posel the other days of Yom Tov. According to the Sfadim, there shouldn't be a difference, because it's going to be kosher anyway the rest of the days of Yom Tov. But comes the Ramah and says that Nitla Pitmaso certainly is not going to be a problem the rest of the days of Yom Tov, because the whole psul of Nitla Pitmaso is only midin Chaser. Even the Ramah, who is Machmir, when it comes to Hadar, it says that the psul of Hadar applies the whole Yom Tov, he says that Nitla Pitmaso is only a psul of Chaser. So since Rabbi Chanina was matul b'avinavik bar, Rabbi Chanina pointed out that Chaser is only a psul on the first day of Yom Tov and not on Chol HaMoed, so the psul of Nitla Pitmaso should not apply the rest of Yom Tov. So this is another reason to be makel, that if the pitum falls off, first of all, in most circumstances, it's only going to be the shoshanta, only the ball on top of the yesrim. It's not going to be the yetzer. According to that, it's not nitla pitmaso with the rov haposkim. But even if it really would be nitla pitmaso, even if the whole eitz falls off, even if you can see the chor, according to the Ramah, it's only posel midin chaser. And if it's only posel midin chaser, that psul applies only b'yom tov rishon. It wouldn't apply for all of Chol HaMoed. So there's room to be makel on Chol HaMoed that nitla pitmaso really shouldn't be a problem. So a person doesn't have to get all turned upside down. If the pitum falls off, in many, many circumstances, he'll be able to be makel. Maybe not on Yom Tov Rishon, maybe even on Yom Tov Rishon, but even if not on Yom Tov Rishon, at least for Chol HaMoed, for the rest of Yom Tov, there might be room to be makel. Yes? So it sounds like as long as the esrog is kosher, it might not even be necessary to borrow an esrog from someone else. That you can take your own. I think a lot of people just feel uncomfortable doing that. If they can get an esrog easily, make a bracha on someone else's esrog, chor is better to do that. So again, a person can decide for themselves what they feel comfortable with. It's certainly more mahudah to have a pitum on the esrog. Meaning, to have, if the esrog had a pitum and then it fell off, it certainly would be better that the pitum would still be on the esrog. So I would say, mios tov al tikari ra, if you can just make a bracha on someone else's esrog, lechor, it's better to do that, and then you'll take your own esrog with the pitum that fell off for the nanuim, for the other parts of the mitzvah. Yes? Yom Tov Sheni, many would say that you should be machmer to treat Yom Tov Sheni. This is the same as Yom Tov Rishon. With Rabbanan, it might have the same din. So that's why I keep on saying that it's the contrast is between Chol HaMoed as opposed to Yom Tov. Another psul of an esrog, a very important psul, is what's called shinui marin. Let's say there's a discoloration on the esrog. The Mishnah in Sukkah on Daf Lamed Hei Amud Beis says that if also chazazis, if the esrog has some kind of a blemish that grew on top of it, so then if it's on a miut of the esrog, b'mokom echad, then it's kosher. So 2 points. First of all, it has to be on a miut, on a minority of the esrog, and secondly, it has to be b'mokom echad. But b'shnayim u'shloshim makomos, if it's in 2 or 3 places, then the Mishnah says it's pasul. The Gemara explains, mishum dehavalei kimenumah, because then it's like a spotted esrog, and it's not hodar. If it has a shinui mara on 2 or 3 places on the esrog, so then it's not hodar, it's not a beautiful esrog. The Rosh adds that this is not only talking about a chazazis, a blemish, some kind of a growth that you can feel on the surface of the esrog. Yeah, there have been many svarim on Dalet Minim that have been published in the last 20 years or so. So you can see the pictures, you see exactly what a blemish is. They have some very strange pictures of what the esrog can look like if it has blemishes on it. So the Rosh says not only the chazazis blemish, but even a mara shachor or a mara lovan, if you have a splotch of black, you have a certain area that's a lot of white, So if it's on the miut of the esrog, it's okay, but b'shnayim u'shloshim makomos is going to be a problem. What does it mean, b'shnayim u'shloshim makomos? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Ravid that it means that if you have the blemish in two or three places on the skin of the esrog, so that if you connected the dots, it'll be on a rove of the surface. Not that the blemish is on rove of the surface, but if you connect all the blemishes together, all of the discolorations of the esrog together, then that whole area, the discoloration and the area within the discoloration will be rove of the shetach, rove of the surface area of the esrog, then the esrog is going to be pus. The Gemara adds a caveat. The Gemara says, but ubechotmo hafila b'mashu, that if you have any discoloration, the chazazis, so if you have, as the Rosh would say, the marashach and the maralovan and the chotem of the esrog, so then even b'mashu, even a tiny amount is going to be pus. What is the chotem? What is the chotem? That's the $64,000 question. The big machlokas in the Rishonim, many different shitas. The Rambam, for example, is a big makil. He assumes the chotem is only the very top of the esrog, that area where the pitim is growing out of. That area right on top. This area right on top of the esrog that the pitim is growing out of. That's the chotem. So if there's a discoloration right there on top, then it's going to be a problem. The Rosh is a bit more makel. The Rosh says that the chotem is from the area where the esrog starts to slant upwards toward the top. This whole area is the chotem according to the Rosh. Okay, the Rambam holds just on the top, and the Rosh says from the area where the esrog starts to slant upwards. And the Chasam Sofer in his Chidushim Tesukah, he says that the Morei Horah are machmir like the Rosh. We assume that the Chotem is that whole upper area of the Esrog where it starts to slant toward the top. The Magen Avraham, though, points out from the Mabit that Lechora, the Psul of Chazazis and any Shin Imarek only applies if it's Nikar La'ayin, if it's recognizable to the eye. You don't have to look so carefully, you don't have to use a magnifying glass to see the change of color. If you can see it, looking at the esrog in a normal way, so then it's going to be puzzle. If it's either on the chotem, it's puzzle b'mashu, and if it's on the rest of the esrog, so then if it covers rove of the surface of the esrog, then it's going to be puzzle. Because the whole idea, zokta ma'abit, is that if it's nikar la'ayin, that's called a shinui marav. If it's not nikar la'ayin, it's not a shinui marav. And it's really a dava mistaber what he says, because why is the chotem different? Why do we say that if there's a discoloration on rove of the surface area of the esrog, it's going to be puzzle, and on the chotem, even b'mashu, it's going to be puzzle? Why is the chotem different? The answer is because the chotem is more recognizable. That's the top of the esrog. If you're holding an esrog, that's what people see. The bottom of the esrog, you got to look more carefully. You have to look, you got to move your hand, you have to look on the bottom. It's more complicated, it's more difficult to see it. The top of the esrog is much more recognizable. So that's why the chotem will pass over b'mashu. And l'chora, it's the same thing. Even if it's not on the chotem, l'chora, the whole idea of shinui marav is that it doesn't look as nice. So looks are a matter of perception. It's a matter of what people see. So the idea of the mabit that the chazodas, the shinui marav, has to be nikar la'ayin to be a psul is very mistaber. It's a davar mistaber ma'od. So l'chora, to check an esrog to see whether it has a shinui marav, you might want to take it outside to see it in the sunlight, not to see it in the dark. You know, sometimes you go to some of these places and the lighting in the area where they're selling esrogim is not so good. So maybe it's better to have better lighting, take it outside, see it in the sun. But to look at it with a magnifying glass, but shuta, one is not mechuyev to do that. Aye, but people do use that. You'll bring an esrog to a posek and very often he'll take a magnifying glass out. So what's he doing that for? So l'chori is doing that for one of two reasons. Either he's not doing it to check for shinui marav, he's doing it to check for chaser. It could be that chaser is not a function of perception, it's a function of the metzius. If the esrog is chaser, it's possible. So sometimes you have to look in the magnifying glass to really ascertain if it's missing something. Something was gouged out of the esrog. It was difficult to see. So first of all, to use a magnifying glass to check for chaser is more mistaber, because that might be a metzius, it's not a matter of perception. The other taina that some people mention is that some of the poskim are a little bit older. You know, they could be in their 60s and their 70s, and their eyesight is failing. You know, after a while, a person needs reading glasses. He can't see as well as he saw when he was 30, when he was 20, when he was 40. So these people are using magnifying glasses not to look more deeply, but simply to regain the eyesight that they lost so that they can see things clearly. Because when we say that it's nikar la'ayin, that the shinui mara has to be nikar to the eye, that means for row of people. But for an older person, maybe if his eyesight is not as good, he wants to look in a magnifying glass to make sure that he's seeing properly, he's seeing as well as a 40-year-old can see, as a 45-year-old can see. But as a general rule, we're really looking for a shinui mara that's recognizable. Is there a hiddur to get an esrog that's completely clean, that even if you look a bit more carefully, you can't see any of these discolorations? Perhaps, but by and large, we're really looking to see discolorations that are noticeable to people. That's really what we're looking for. Yes, I saw him.
About definition of potent. If the esrog is shaped like a new doll, so therefore it's, for a while it's a cylinder, and then it slopes up. But if you have an esrog which is shaped like a pear, sort of, and there's no place where it's cylindrical at all, so anywhere from the equator on up is considered the chotem?
That's what I would imagine. I would imagine halfway up is already considered the chotem, because there's no other line of demarcation that you could have in such an esrog. Yes?
Should I get a certain distance you hold it when you check? Because like, if you hold it really close, then it can be recognizable. If you're holding it like,
the Beshachter, I think, says that you can hold it at arm's length, hold it in a normal way, that you would hold something. You don't have to hold it up to your eye. You know, if you read it from a page, right, so normally it's 14 inches or so, I think that's what the eye doctors say, right? The normal way to read is 14 or 16 inches, depending on the... But that's what you're looking for. You're not looking, no one's going to look at, you don't look at a piece of paper like this, so you don't have to look at the esrog like that either. Poskim talk about what's called bletlach. Bletlach are the scabs that an esrog develops when it's hit by a thorn. Hit by a thorn as it's growing, and then it heals itself. So just like a human being, when a human being gets a maka, so he develops a scab when the skin heals. So too, the esrog develops some kind of a scab. That's called a bletl. Bletlach. What's the din of bletlach? So it's a major machlokas in the poskim. The Shulchan Aruch says that the chazozis is kemin avabuo sheyesh behen mamash shemakomo nikah b'mishmish shukavo mishar esrog. That a chazozis is something that's a little bit above the skin that you can feel on the esrog. So the bletlach, as well, there are many bletlach that they're scabs that you can feel on the esrog. So the Maril felt that since you can feel them on the esrog, they're like a chazazis, they're a shinimar, and they would pass on the esrog. Came the Chumash Hadeshim, and he said, I think bletlach are different, because bletlach amara esrog, it's very common to have a bletl on the esrog. That's how an esrog heals itself when it's hit by a thorn. So you can't say that that's a shinimara. Shinimara means a discoloration on the esrog that's abnormal, that's out of the ordinary. But since a bletl is a normal discoloration of the esrog, then that is kosher. That's the famous kul of the Chumash Hadeshim. Nafkamina being, let's say you have bletlach on most of the shetach of the esrog, most of the surface area of the esrog, the same way that the chazadas would be. Let's say it's on most of the area of the esrog below the chotem. If you connected all of the bletlach, then it would be on most of the surface area. According to the Chumash Hadeshim, that's completely kosher. According to the Maril, that would be a serious problem. And similarly, if you'd have even a mashu of a bletl on the chotem, that can happen. You have a skeb on the chotem of the esrog, according to the Maril, that's no difference. That's no different than having a shinui mara, having a brown spot or a white spot or a chazazis on the chotem. Even if it's a mashu lechora, that should be a problem. But according to the Chumash Hadeshim, if we consider that the mara esrog, then there wouldn't be a problem, even if you have a bletl on the chotem. The question is these black dots that you have on the esrog. What's the status of the black dots? Even if you'll be makil for the Chumash Hadeshim, for a bletl that's on the chotem, how about the black dots? So, lechor, according to the Chumash Hadeshim, black dots should be the same as bletlach, because black dots are very common. You find black dots on esrogim, you find brown dots too, but you find black dots also. So, there are some poskim that want to suggest that maybe the black dots on the chotem should be okay, even if you have a black dot, chotem. If you have a shinui mara, even a mashu on the chotem, it passes, but a black dot might not be a problem on the chotem because it's mara esrog. The Bir Halacha quotes from the Bikurei Yaakov that the only type of black dot that passes on the esrog is black machmas ipush. If it's because of decay, so then it'll passel. But in terms of Shine Mara, it doesn't possibly, because it's Mara Esrog, it's no different than the Trumas Hadeshen's Bletlach, which are also considered Mara Esrog, and they don't passel on the Chotem. Many poskim are much more machmir. Many poskim assume that when the Rosh says that a Mara Shochar or a Mara Lovon passels in the Esrog, he means not just a blotch of black or a blotch of Lovon, like the Chazazis, but even if it's a black dot. Black, the Rosh assumes, is a Shini Mara. It's a change of color. It's not the Mara Esrog. It's not the normal Mara Esrog. Brown dots are more of the normal Mara Esrog. But black dots are a little abnormal. So the Rosh considers that a Shini Mara, and one should be careful not to have any black dots on the Chotem. That's how many poskim assume. So people are very careful not to have black dots on the Chotem. You can have a little bit of black below. You can have a little bit of black on the rest of the Esrog below the Chotem, as long as you don't have enough black dots that if you connect them all, it'll be on most of the surface area of the Esrog, so then that'll be okay. But on the Chotem, even a Mashu will pass on. So that's why there are many poskim that are machmir to assume that you shouldn't have any kind of black dots on top of the Chotem. But not everyone agrees. As we said, the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Bikurei Yaakov that it is a Mara Esrog. It's no different than Bletlach according to the Trumas Hadeshen. So only black machmas ipush would be a problem, because that's somehow more significant. That's considered a Shini Mara. But regular black is not a Shini Mara, says the Bikurei Yaakov. So therefore, even a Mashu on the Chotem would not pass. Yes?
Even if it's a Shini Mara, would it still be governed by Nikolai?
Yes, according to the Mabit, it would only be called a Shini Mara if it's recognizable. But if it's a tiny black dot that you have to like turn it around and around and around, half the people don't notice it, only one person with eagle eyes can notice it, so l'chor, according to the Mabit, it shouldn't be a problem. Right, so in most circumstances, you're not going to be able to see the black dot.
The reality is the most, like when you take it to a poskim, that's more or less what they're looking, one of the main things that they're looking for, that little dot.
Right, but if you look at, the problem is that the lighting that we have is often not so good. But if you look at it in good lighting and you turn it around, If you're a trained eye, not an expert, but if you've looked at enough over time, then you might notice a black dot. Some of the black dots are really small. You know, there are often times that you bring an esrog to a poskim, he looks at it, he says, ah, it's beautiful. And then you'll turn to him and you'll say, what about this? And then he looks more carefully. So, you know, he's looking more carefully only because he senses that you want a mehudadik esrog, you want a very beautiful esrog. So he wants to make sure that there's no black dot there b'chla. But me'ikir adin, it might not be necessary to be machmir for that, because if he didn't notice it on the first go around, mistam, it's okay anyway. Okay. Another shaila that comes up with an esrog is green, the color green. Mm-hmm. So the Mishnah in Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis quotes Machlokas Tanoim where the yorok kekarti is kosher apostle. We pass in that yorok kekarti, green like karti, like a leek, that's possible. What is that color of Yorok Hikarti? So Tosis and Daf Lamed Aleph Amud Beis and Sukkah quotes from the Yerushalmi that it means Yorok Isve Hasadeh, so green that it's like grass. Most of the green that we see on the Esrogim is not that green. I've seen a few Esrogim in my life that are very green. Very green. Almost, you know, they practically are Ki Isve Hasadeh. So that's what the Mishnah is talking about. And about such an esrog, if it's Yorok Hikarti Ki Isve Hasadeh, then Taka would be possible. But the question is, why is such an esrog possible? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes a machlokes in the Achronim. The Bach is of the opinion that if it's Yorok Hikarti, it's possible because it's a Shini Mara. Green, that's Yorok Hikarti Ki Isve Hasadeh, is no different than also Chazozes, than black, than white. It's a Shini Mara and it passels in the esrog. But the Magen Avraham disagrees. He says that it's not a Shini Mara in the esrog. The problem is it's lo nigmar peira. The fruit is not completely ripe. If it's green, then it's not a ripened fruit. It's a lack of hodah. Right? It's a lack of hodah for a different reason. It's not a completely grown fruit. It's not because of a Shini Mara. What's the nafkamina, whether it's possible for this reason or possible for that reason? Nafkamina is, let's say you know that it's going to change color. You know that it's the esrog, even though it's green right now, it's going to change color. How do you know, Vesachnish? You're such an esrog expert that you know it's going to change color. So if you know that it's going to turn yellow, according to the Magen Avraham, it is nigmar peira, because once it's ripe, even if it's green right now, then it'll change color. But if the problem is a problem of Shini Mara, it doesn't matter that it's going to change color. Right now, it's green, so therefore it's going to be possible. The Mishnah Berurah points out that even according to the Magen Avraham, one shouldn't be makel unless it starts to turn yellow. Because who knows if it's going to change color? Once it starts to turn yellow, so that shows you that it's not going to remain green. It shows you that it's already ripened. So even now, the esrog is kasha. Because once it's nigmar peira, so then according to the Magen Avraham, it's kasha. And there won't be a problem. According to the Bach, if there still is green ke'isve hasada on it right now, that's a shinimar, and that'll be possible. But according to the Magen Avraham, if the whole psul is because lo nigmar peira, then as long as you know that it's gonna turn colors, and the Mishnah Berurah says if it already started to turn yellow, so then you know that it's changing color, that is nigmar peira, and that would be kasha. Yes. Yes. So what's the din lahalacha? How do we follow? So most achronim, the Mishnah Berurah, the Chazanish, the Chayyadim, a lot of the poskim are mekel. The mekel for the Magen Avraham, that it's not a shinimara, but rather it's a problem of lo nigmar peira. So as long as it started to change color, it's okay. So if you have any esrog that's a little bit yellow, but it still has a little bit of a greenish tinge to it, according to these poskim, it's not a problem. The truth is, if it only has a little bit of a greenish tinge, it's not ke'isve hasada anyway, it's not so green, that wouldn't be a problem bechlal, even according to the Bach. But certainly, according to those poskim who assume that green is only possible because it's lo nigmar peira, once it starts to turn yellow just a little bit, there's no reason to possible that esrog. There is a comment, though, of the Bikur Yaakov, he's machmeh, he says that a bal nefesh should be machmeh for the svar of the Bach. This turned worlds. The Bach is a big machmeh here, and the Bikur Yaakov says you should follow the Bach's chumra that green is a shinei mara, and if it's a shinei mara, then even a little bit is going to passel. Even if the esrog started to turn colors, turn yellow, it's still going to passel. Reb Chaim Volozhiner in his tshuvas he wants to be machmer as well. He passeled the green esrog. He's machmer for the Bach. Some point out it's not Reb Chaim Volozhiner's tshuvas. If you look carefully, the experts say it's the tshuva of the Mishkanes Yaakov, who is a Talmud of Reb Chaim Volozhiner. His tshuva got into the tshuvas of Reb Chaim Volozhiner. But he's very machmer. Rabbi Shechter, I think, is very machmer for green. He holds that green is a shini mara. He passes like the Bach. So if it's really green on the chotem, even a little bit of green on the chotem, he won't take that particular esrog. Rabbi Shechter is very makel for other things, but for green, he's very machmir. Aye, but you see the pictures, many of the gedolim took green esrogim. So, l'chor, the answer is, those esrogim are not really green. They're not really green. It's a much lighter shade of green. If it's a lighter shade of green, that's not going to pass, even according to the Bach. Because the Bach still is only talking about Yorah Kekarti, which Tosus explains means ke'isve asada. It's not so green, so then it's not going to pass b'chlam. That's l'chor, the answer. But should one take a yellow esrog? Maybe it's better to take a yellower esrog. Maybe it's more mahuda to take a yellower esrog, so that you'll obviate the whole problem, and you'll be yotzei even according to the Bach. But the pshuto, if you have a little bit of a light amount of green, according to everyone, it's okay. So you don't have to stand on your head and work so hard to get an esrog that's completely yellow, doesn't even have a light tinge of green, because even according to the Bach, l'chora, that's going to be kosher. So a hint, yes.
According to Shino Mara, I mean, all esrogin start off green, don't they?
I'm sorry?
All esrogin start off green, right? Before they ripen.
They start off green, but we're not looking at the estrogen when they start off. We're talking about estrogen when they're cut off the tree.
No, so you say even if you grew that way, it's still called a shinui mara.
No, because estrogen, once they're cut off the tree, they're supposed to be a certain color. So even if they start off green, but they all change. Uh-huh. So if it remained green, that's a shinui mara in the esrog, according to the Bach. What's the halacha in the following case? Let's say a person has an esrog that's completely clean on top, but it's the gidol, the shape of the esrog is not as nice. Right, so in the scheme of things, what are you looking for in the esrog? Is the gidol more important? Is the symmetry more important? Or should we say that the cleanliness is more important? So if you were to ask me, based on the rules that we've developed, I would say that the symmetry is more important. Of course, cleanliness is a value, but I would say that an esrog that has more symmetry or better symmetry, that's more mehuda. Why? Because again, we said that hadar is a function of perception. The Mabit says that if it's nikar la'ayin, that the psul of osa chazazis and shinui mara is based on whether it's nikar la'ayin or not. So if it's a function of perception, then lechora, hidur is not hodr. Hidur means lechatchila in the esrog. Hodr means what's going to passel even by the evid. So if the hodr that passels by the evid is a function of nikar la'ayin, then the hidur lechatchila should also be a function of nikar la'ayin. So I would say that the symmetry should play a more important role. The fact is, most poskim assume that cleanliness is more important. They'd be willing to take an esrog where the pitum is, you know, going toward the side, as long as the esrog is completely clean. I don't know. I think that both should play a role. I think that to some extent, the cleanliness is certainly important, But if all you have is a little, a tiny brown dot on top, which doesn't passel anyway, but the more clean the esrog is, the more mahuda the esrog is, I think it's certainly important to get a clean esrog, to try as best as you can, but the symmetry should also play a role. The giddle should play a role as well, because again, hither is a function of what is nikar la'ayin, and the giddle certainly is recognizable to the eye, and that should play a role in the factors that you're looking for in the mahudadika esrog. Yes.
Lacking
any spots or brown dots. I'm not even talking about spots on the top, which might passel. I'm talking about even brown dots. Brown dots definitely don't passel. That's Mara Esrog for sure. But the cleaner the Esrog, the better. So to get a completely clean Esrog on top is going to cost a lot of money. So we'll talk about whether you're mechuyav to spend that money. But cleanliness is certainly a value, but I think the giddle should play a role as well. Yes? So some feel that a pitum is part of the Mara Esrog, so it is better to have an Esrog with a pitum. Depending on where you are, that might cost you money too. So the question is, how much more money do you have to spend to get an Esrog Mahuda? But yes, having a pitum, according to many, is part of the Esrog, so that would be a hither. Some people are only concerned about the cleanliness, so they'd be much happier with an Esrog that's completely clean, even if it doesn't have a pitum. Question?
Yeah, if you have all these different sheets, and you want to be yoked of all the sheets, it's almost probably impossible.
It's going to cost you a lot of money.
Cost you a lot of money.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Every sheet, does that happen with the Eved as well as with Katila? Do we know what's with the Eved by each posek? There was, that could be yoked.
I think most poskim would say that if all you have are bletlich, you have little scabs on the esrog, even if they cover most of the surface area of the esrog, you have brown dots on most of the esrog. These are not problems. You start to have black, so black is something to consider. Does it cover most of the surface area of the esrog? Is it on the chotem? Is it recognizable? These are things that you're looking for. Strange discolorations in the skin of the esrog. That's a shinimara. Something that's not a shinimara, so then we're discussing hidurim in the esrog. That's a totally different level. Okay, let's move on to the lulav. Let's talk a little bit about the lulav. So of course a lulav is supposed to be fresh, should be green. It's not going to be considered yavesh. Most of all the lulavim are not going to be yavesh. To be considered dry, it has to be so dry that it's brittle. It's not going to be yavesh. But it's a hither. It's nice to have a lulav that's green, that's fresh, it's not turning white. It should be shakeable. Part of the mitzvah of Netilas Lulav is Nanuim, shaking the Dalet Minim, so it's important to have a lulav that's shakeable. What passels in a lulav? So there are two things to consider in a lulav. First of all, if the tiyomis is split, the Gemara says that's a psul in the lulav. What is a tiyomis? That's the question. That's a major machlokas in the Rishonim. The Rif and the Rambam hold that the tiyomis is really every single leaf of a lulav is made really out of two leaves. So rove of the leaves of the lulav, right? Each leaf of the lulav is called a tiyomis according to the Rif and the Rambam. So if rove of the leaves of the lulav are split on top, then that's called having a split tiyomis, nechleka hatiyomis, and that's going to passel the lulav. That's the Rif and the Rambam. But the Rosh quotes from the Gaonim that the tiyomis is only the middle leaf. The middle leaf is called a tiyomis. So nechleka hatiyomis is only if the middle leaf is split. If the middle leaf is split, so then the lulav is going to be, if even the middle leaf is split, that's nechleka hatiyomis, and then the lulav is going to be pasul. How do we paskin ledina? Big machlokas the mechaber and the ramah. The mechaber is a makel here. The mechaber says that nechleka hatiyomis is only if rove of the leaves of the lulav are split. So svardim have a very easy time over here, because it's very rare that rove of the leaves of the lulav are going to be split. But the Ramah is machmer for the Gaon, and the Ramah holds that nechleka hatiyomis means that even if the middle leaf is split, that's also going to be a problem. The question is, how much of the leaf has to be split to be a problem? So the Ritva in Sukkah writes that only if it's nechleka hatiyomis beruba, if most of the leaf is split, what do you mean most of the leaf? Most of the leaf from the top of the shedra to the top of the lulav. You know, the shedra ends at a certain point, and then only leaves. The spine is what you put facing you in the lulav. So the spine ends at a certain point, and then the rest is only leaves. So the Ritva says that the tiyomis is not allowed to be split, the rubo, from the point of the shedra till the top of that middle leaf. The Ran quotes the Yeshomim, who says no, the Nechleka Hatyomes, even Bemiyuto, is going to be a problem. This Yeshomim shake the world. Even Nechleka Hatyomes Bemiyuto is going to be a problem as well. Now, what does that mean, Bemiyuto? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Chayyadim and says, you know what Miyuto means? Even Bemashahu. So it's the Chayyadim's understanding of the Yeshomim in the Ran. Chumra al Gabi Chumra. What's this based on? Why should I assume even if the Tiyomis is split, B'miyuto, it should be a problem? So someone has suggested that it's not a Lakicha Tama. It's something missing in the Lulav. Something missing in the Lulav. The Mishnah Berurah suggests something different. He says, you know, if Nechleka HaTiyomis, even B'miyuto, even B'mashu, you know why it's going to be a problem? It's all a Chashash D'Rabbanan. Because we're afraid, even if it's split partially, through the shaking of the Lulav, it might become split Berubo. And it might become possible. It's a chashash derabbanan. Chashash derabbanan. But l'chora, the whole idea that if it's even split b'mashu, it's a problem, that's a chumrah. The Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Gra that no, you can take the lulav as long as the tiyomis is not split b'rubo. So should one try to get a lulav that's not split at all? Maybe there's a chumrah to try to follow the yeshamim in the Ran, but the Ikar Adin, one doesn't have to be choshesh for that. It's split, the miyuto, split a little bit more than a, you know, it's not a mashim. It split a little bit, right? It's not completely closed. It split a little bit, l'chora, there is room to be mekel. So you can look a little bit to find a lula that's not split at all. Now that they have the deri lulavim. Deri lulavim are much thicker, they're much more, they're stronger by nature. So they can take a beating, and the tiyomis doesn't get split so well. So it's a lot easier to find the lulav that doesn't have a split tiyomis bichlal. But you don't have to look for so long. If you look and you find one that doesn't have a tiyomis that's split at all, that's great. But if it's split b'mashu, l'chorad is what to rely on to be makel for such a lulav. If the lulav is covered with that red stuff on the top, what's called kara, the kara. Is that a lulav that you should take or not? So the poskim say better not to take a lulav that has that kara, that has the brown stuff on the top. Why? For two reasons. First of all, because you know it's hard to know whether the tiyomis is split or not. Maybe you take off the kara, you'll see that the tiyomis is split. What's more, if there's kara on top, if there's brown on top, so then you can't shake the lulav properly. So you're not going to have the kiskus of the olim, it's not going to shake properly, so you're not going to be yotzi the nanuim as well as you should. So it's better to take a lulav that doesn't have any kara on top. Okay, this is the first thing to look for in a lulav, that the tioma shouldn't be split. How much can it be split to keep it kosher? The other issue to look for in a lulav is okum. Okum and kofuf. A curved lulav, a bent lulav. The Gemara says that if a lulav is okum, if it's curved, if it's doma lamagal, if it's curved so much that it looks like a sickle, so then it's possible. Doma lamagal is quite a dagger, right? The sickles, right? A sickle is like this, right? That's what they use to cut the tefillah with. Doma lamagal, I think most of the lulavim are not going to be so curved. The Gemara says that only if it's doma lamagal, if it's okum, away from the shedra. I mean, the shedra is curved away from it. We normally hold the lulav with the shedra facing us, so if it's curved away from you, then that's going to be a problem. But if it's curved to the sides, or if it's curved toward you, that's not even okum. That's not going to be a problem. It's kosher completely. That's okum. And the other issue is lulav kofuf, if it's bent. So bent means, let's say the top of the lulav is bent a little bit. The leaves are bent a little bit. So that also could be possible. Okum, if it's doma lamagal, is possible. That's curved. Shedra is curved. And kofuf, if the olim, if the leaves are bent a little bit, that could be a problem too. But the Rosh has a tshuva where he says that if only the middle leaf is bent, only the middle leaf, if the tiyomis is bent, he says, I think that's the best type of lulav to take. That's called a kneppel. There's a whole terminology over here. Right? Yiddish. A Yiddish terminology in Dalet means. The Rosh says that if you have a kneppel, that middle leaf is bent, I think that's even better. Why? Because if the middle leaf is bent, then you're more guaranteed that the tiyomis is not going to be split. So it's a lechatchila to take a kneppel. Chassidim take a lulav with a kneppel. Most Litvish people will not take a lulav with a kneppel because they're machmer for the Ran. The Mishnah Berurah quotes the Ran who's machmer, who says, no, even if the lulav is kofuf, even if the tiyomis is the only leaf that's kofuf, it's posel. So it's from one extreme to the other. The Rosh says this is a hidda lechatchila and the Ran says it's going to be posel. So many al machmer for the run, they assume that the leaves should not be bent bichlal. It's better to take a lulav that the leaves are completely straight. If you can get a lulav that the tiyomis is not split at all, matov. If it's split a mashahu, then lechora that's going to be kosher as well. Some point out that there is a hider in a lulav to try to take a lulav that's completely straight. It's completely straight. Put the shedra out toward you, you'll see that it's completely straight. The Chazon Ish felt that you didn't have to be machmer for that, but others were. The Biskirav was machmer for that. He felt the lulav should be completely straight. It's a hider. It's not going to passel if it's not completely straight. But they felt that there's a hider. So some try to take a lulav that's as straight as possible. But again, you don't have to drive yourself crazy. If you find a lulav that's not split in the tiyomis bichlal, better to take that lulav, even if the lulav is not completely straight. Yes?
Does the Ran talk explicitly about a kanafel, or is it just an extension of what he says about
kanafel? None of the Rishonim used the word kanafel. But they talk about kafuf in the leaves. So the Ran says if it's kafuf in the leaves, even a little bit, even a mashu, that's going to be a problem. He assumes that even if it's yomis is the only thing kafuf, there might be a problem.
Yeah,
I'm sorry? Nifridu olive. If the leaves, nifridu, nifritsu olive or nifridu olive? If the leaves are separate. I don't think so. I think kafuf is just, that's a different. So the Gemara on Daf Lamed Beis and Aleph says that if lulav is kafuf, so then it's going to be pasul. It's a different type of psul. Hadasin. What's there to look for in the hadasin? So we know the length of the hadasin is supposed to be 3 tfachim. The lulav is supposed to be 4 tfachim. The hadasin is supposed to be 3 tfachim. What does that mean? So it's a machlokes. It's anywhere from between around 9.5 inches to 11.5 inches. According to the Chazon Ish, it will be 11.5 inches. Where do we measure the shear of the hadasim? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Rishonim that we measure the shear of three tefachim in the eitz, in the stem, not in the leaves. Sometimes the top of the hadasim have leaves growing out of them, so they're not mitzvah for the shear. It has to be in the stem. Where does it start? Can you just, let's say you have stem on the bottom but no leaves, can you start from there? No, so the poskim say you should start from the first grouping of the leaves until the end of the stem. The first grouping of the leaves on the bottom till the end of the stem. That's the three tefachim. We know since the Torah uses the phrase anaf eitz avos to describe the hadasim, hadasim are supposed to be mishuloshim, are supposed to come in triplicate, that groups of leaves come in three. What does it mean that they're mishulosh? So Rashi has a chumrah that the leaves have to come out of the same stem, exactly the same stem. So the Bali Tosfos say that's a chumrah yisera. They don't have to come out of the same stem, but rather they just have to be smuchim udvukim zebazem. They have to be close to each other, attached to each other. What does that mean, attached to each other? So they quote from the Chazon Ish that as long as you can draw a line between all the stems, then that's okay. Let's say you have a stem over here, and then a stem over there, and a stem a little bit on top, and you have leaves growing out of each one of these stems. So you could draw a line connecting each one of these stems. So even though the top and the bottom stem are not the same, then it's not coming out of the same stem, but as long as you can draw a line connecting each one of the stems, that's called smuchim udvukim zebazeh, and that's enough to be called mishulash. What's the din if the leaves of the hadas fall off? It's also a big machlokas. Some Rishonim say that if any of the leaves fall off, if you're lacking mishulash in any of the groupings of the leaves, it'll passel. Others say that even if you only have one grouping that's mishulash, it's still kosher. We paskin lechatchili are supposed to have mishulash in all of the groupings in the shear of the hadas of gimel tefachim, but b'di'evit, if you have rove, that's okay. That's how most poskim assume. So, you know, the best thing is to try to get hadasim that are kashir chazanish. Get the aleph aleph hadasim. You know, now they come in packages. And they come in packages that you can even see them, so you can even test them a little bit, look to see if they're mishulash, if the stems are on the same line, on the same level. Try to check it the best you can. Get the best quality, the Chazon Ish hadasim aleph aleph. And if you get that quality, mistama, even if it's not going to be mishulash bekulo, it'll be mishulash for ruba. But you should be careful when you put the hadasim into the koishikol, not to shtup them in so tightly that the leaves are going to come off, because you're going to spend so much time trying to find hadasim that are completely mishulash without the leaves off, and then by putting it in the koshikal, you're going to cause more trouble. So better to be careful when you put it in the koshikal. Aravas. What's an arava? What is simonim of the arava? The Gemara in Daf Lamed Aleph says that the arava has three simonim. First of all, that the stem should be red. Secondly, the leaves should be drawn, they shouldn't be circular. And thirdly, they should be smooth. The Rama points out that this idea that the stem is supposed to be red, that's not really ma'akev. As long as the stem is not white, that's going to be kosher. If it's green, it's okay. It doesn't have to be red. Even if it's green, it's okay. Many of the aravas that are sold now, the stem is red, so it's not really a problem. It's easy to get aravas that are like that. What a psulim of the aravas? The Mishnah Berurah says if the aravas are the niktam rosh, if it's cut off on top, that's pasul. If yovshu rov olim, if most of the leaves dry out, that's also pasul. Zoktemog and Avram lechatchila, you should get aravas that none of the leaves are missing. It's not so difficult to get, so one should try to do that. Some have a chumrah to try to get aravas that have what's called a lavluv. What's a lavluv? That's a little growth coming out of the top. Right? A little wisp coming out of the top of the arava. Why do they do that? Because that's a simen that it's not niktam rosha. So it's a hider. It's a hider to get aravas with a lavluv. You have to be machmer to get dafka with a lavluv. It's not absolutely necessary. If you see that it's not niktam rosha, then lechora that's sufficient. There's an extra hitter that some people have to get aravas with a lavluv in their mizgah. Okay, just a few general points about buying dalet minim. We know the Gemara in Bava Kamma. Yes, a question before we talk about hidden mitzvah.
A lot of times, by like the fifth or sixth or seventh day of the Chag, the aravos are just like they're very, very dry out. Like there's like a lot.
So if the aravos are mamish black, they're really dried. So it's better to get a new set, right? If it's not black, if it's just turn, I mean, even if it's black, it's not dry. You can still move them around. They're not brittle. But it's probably better to buy another set. There are ways of treating the dalet minim. There are ways of putting water in the dalet minim, put them in the fridge, or to put water in the bag, on the bottom of the bag. You don't want to put water around the dalet minim, around the leaves, because that can cause them to mildew. But if you put water in the bottom of the bag, that can hydrate them a little bit, and then they won't turn black. So if they do turn black towards the end of Yom Tov, lechora you should splurge a little bit and get a new set, because that's a hidden mitzvah. What's the din of hidden mitzvah? Taka, the Gemara Bava Kama says on Daf Tes that hidden mitzvah ad shlish b'mitzvah, that you only mechuyav to spend until shlish b'mitzvah, a third of the mitzvah. What does it mean, shlish b'mitzvah? So the Gemara actually has a suffix, whether shlish milabar or shlish milagav. How do we estimate a third? What does that mean? So let's say a kosher set of dalet minim can be bought for $30. So the suffix in the Gemara is whether we look at a third as coming as part of the 30, meaning 10 out of 30, a third of 30 is 10. And then we have to add that on. You have to be willing to spend 40 for the mitzvah. Or do we do it milabar on the outside, that after you've spent the third, the hither is going to be a third of the whole, meaning you have to spend $45, so that a third of 45 is 15. Right, that's a third of the whole. It basically means a half. You have to spend a third for the mitzvah, or what we would call a half, in order to have hidden mitzvah. So, you know, a person doesn't really have to spend so much money for the dalet minim. A kosher set of dalet minim, you'll probably buy for $40 or $50. At mistama, it doesn't cost more than that to get a kosher set of dalet minim. You want to spend more for hidden, so then a person is mechuyav to spend shlish b'mitzvah. You have to spend another third. So depending on how you chesh in the third, you'll have to spend a little bit more for the mitzvah. But some point out that if people are willing to spend a lot of money for other things in life, then it's not inappropriate to spend for dalet minim. You know, you'll buy a coffee for $5 and you'll eat out in a restaurant for $10 and without batting an eyelash. So to spend a little bit more for dalet minim, lechora is an appropriate gesture. Rabbi Shechter, though, likes to point out that if a person is willing to spend more money for the dalet minim, what he really should do is spend only at shlish b'mitzvah and set aside the rest of the money that he was willing to spend for the mitzvah and give it for tzedakah. That's really what he should do. So if a person is on a level that he's willing to do that, then that's probably what he should do. Spend at shlish b'mitzvah. He should be happy with the set of dalet minim that he buys and give the rest for tzedakah. The reality is most people are not going to do that. So for most people who are going to give that tzedakah, but they also want a nice set of dalet minim, because it gives them a greater love for the mitzvah, lechora, it's okay to spend a little bit more, and maybe it's appropriate to spend a little bit more for the mitzvah, so that they'll be mahada the mitzvah, and they'll have a simcha of the mitzvah, and as a result of that, the mitzvah will be more meaningful for them. The key to keep in mind is Usmachtem l'fei Hashem Elokeichem Shivas Yomim. The mitzvah of dalet minim is supposed to produce simcha Ezeh Osher Asameach Bechelko. A person is happy when he sees his portion. Very often, you know, Hoshanah's come around, everyone is walking around with their set of Dalaminim, and you look at someone else's Esrig and you say to yourself, ah, such a beautiful Esrig, I wish I had an Esrig like that. But the reality is, if you look carefully at his Esrig, you know, if he were to give it to you, you'd see there are brown dots on his Esrig too. Just like on your Esrig, there are small brown dots. He has brown dots too. Everyone has their own peckle. A person shouldn't look at someone else's situation and feel, you know, I'd be more besimcha if I had his. The yisod of the dalet minim was usmachtem lefnei Hashem Elokeichem shivas yamim. We should be smeichim b'chalkeinu, and if we're smeichim b'chalkeinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be mosif brocha to our chelek. We should all be zocha that b'schus, all of the mitzvahs of Yom Tov that we do, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be mesameach us with the binyan by Yishlishi b'mheira v'yameinu amen. Gemar chasima tova. Thank you. Well, sorry about that.